With Apple's success came fame to its poster boy. Inc. became the first magazine to put him on its cover in October 1981. "This man has changed business forever," it proclaimed. It showed Jobs with a neatly trimmed beard and well-styled long hair, wearing blue jeans and a dress shirt with a blazer that was a little too satiny. He was leaning on an Apple II and looking directly into the camera with the mesmerizing stare he had picked up from Robert Friedland. When Steve Jobs speaks, it is with the gee-whiz enthusiasm of someone who sees the future and is making sure it works, the magazine reported. Time followed in February 1982 with a package on young entrepreneurs. The cover was a painting of Jobs, again with his hypnotic stare. Jobs, said the main story, practically single-handed, created the personal computer industry. The accompanying profile, written by Michael Moritz, noted, "At 26, Jobs heads a company that 6 years ago was located in a bedroom and garage of his parents' house, but this year is expected to have sales of $600 million. As an executive, Jobs has sometimes been petulant and harsh on subordinates. Admits he, "I've got to learn to keep my feelings private." Despite his new fame and fortune, he still fancied himself a child of the counterculture. On a visit to a Stanford class, he took off his Wilkes Bashford blazer and his shoes, perched on top of a table, and crossed his legs into a lotus position. The students asked questions, such as when Apple's stock price would rise, which Jobs brushed off. Instead, he spoke of his passion for future products, such as someday making a computer as small as a book. When the business questions tapered off, Jobs turned the tables on the well-groomed students. "How many of you are virgins?" he asked. There were nervous giggles. "How many of you have taken LSD?" More nervous laughter, and only one or two hands went up. Later, Jobs would complain about the new generation of kids, who seemed to him more materialistic and careerist than his own. "When I went to school, it was right after the 60s, and before this general wave of practical purposefulness had set in," he said. "Now students aren't even thinking in idealistic terms, or at least nowhere near as much." His generation, he said, was different. "The idealistic wind of the 60s is still at our backs, though, and most of the people I know who are my age have that ingrained in them forever."